Hey, resilient recruiters, here's reason number two why you must attend the Recruitment Coach Live Summit in London this September. And that is the keynote presentations. You'll gain exclusive insights from other top billing recruiters and entrepreneurs who've either scaled their own desk or built multi-seven-figure businesses. I myself will, of course, be one of the speakers, but the presentations that I am the most excited about are not professional speakers and trainers, but other recruitment business owners like you who will be unpacking their most effective tactics and strategies. No theory, just practical insights from people who are in the trenches, ordinary people achieving extraordinary results. There's still time to take advantage of the early bird pricing. By the way, it's happening on September 17th and 18th. So don't miss out. Reserve your place now at recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Okay, welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby. I'm delighted to be joined today by Paul Taff. Paul is the CEO of Finance People Solutions, which he founded in 2014. Prior to joining the recruitment industry, Paul had a successful career as both a CFO and a CRO for U.S. global blue chip companies such as Pepsi, Nike, Lear Corporation, and Dell, as well as having worked in private equity. He's also one of our Inner Circle Apex members. This is Paul's second time on the show. The last time was way back in episode 21, about 100 episodes ago. And since then, he's actually launched his own podcast as well, which I'm interested to learn more about. But Paul, thanks for being here.
Mark, the top of the morning to you. It's a pleasure to be here. So tell me, when did we have our first podcast? When was the date for that? I can't remember.
Oh, I don't have the date, but it was back in 2020. And the world's changed a lot since then.
Exactly.
Crazy time. So, like, can you give me an update on your side since, you know, we last did this? What have been the latest developments at Finance People Solutions?
Absolutely, Mark. Well, there's been a lot going on, and even this morning is just crazy. Sending out offers, getting customers and candidates together, but I'll come to that in a sec. Yeah, a lot has changed. I mean, we're having an excellent business performance. We've doubled the team. We've added to the two Christianas and Susanna and Neve. We've added three very young, talented people, Anna, Dan, and Milena. And it's great fun working with these. We have a mixture in the team of, you know, younger and older people, and it grooves very well together. What's been going on? We're pushing a lot more focused on innovation, and I'm glad I call the company Finance People Solutions, because solutions is the appropriate terminology now for recruitment these days. I mean, the market is crazy, particularly on the interim side. I mean, it's just absolutely crazy. Candidates are gone within hours. We're just recruiting an interim head of accounting, or actually three of them. And the accounting market here is not as strong as it is in the UK. There are less accountants. The education system is very different here. But, you know, I'm trying to get CFOs and the candidates meeting within a few hours and making decisions. Otherwise, if they wait a day, these guys will be gone. We've also introduced a product which I'm very excited about, which is the finance organization benchmarking. We do that with my partner, and that involves benchmarking a finance organization for efficiency. So we go through all the processes in an interact. It's a digital product. We go through all the processes in an interactive session with the company, and basically the bottom line is after we've done our work, we produce a report which shows where the company is green versus best practice. We have a benchmark, a best practices database, which we use for very, very good database in that case. So that people find out what's red, what's yellow, what's green. And this is great for private equity because they, you know, when private equity buys a company, Mark, the companies are never ready for private equity ownership. They don't have, you know, don't have timely reporting. They don't have the granularity in the reporting. So the private equity guys are always struggling, and they always change the CFO. And that's another thing we've changed. So, you know, they change the CFO, bring in a CFO, and the CFO discovers, oh God, my team is a mess. What am I going to do now? So they start, you know, talking to recruiters and trying to get a team together. We do everything for those PE portfolio companies, from CFO right down to positions from 60,000 euros a year. So that's a big change. That's one of the reasons we've expanded the team. And private equity loves that because you know, you get them up on their feet very quickly. The CFO is not bogged down with recruitment. We support them there because of my time in private equity. I think I probably understand the CFO private equity DNA better than any other CEO in the recruitment business because of my own experience there. And it's great fun. It's a lot of pressure. It's high speed. And I love that kind of stuff, as you know.
Amazing. There's a lot to unpack there. And your benchmarking product sounds fantastic. So I'd love to learn more about that. Just to give some context, in case people didn't hear our previous session. So you're from your voice, you're obviously an Irishman, but you are based in Germany. And you specialize in placing CFOs and their teams on both an interim and an executive search basis. That's your kind of core offering, but I know you do other things beside that. What's the sort of revenue that you guys are sort of on track for at the moment? And well, let's start there.
Well, being a CFO for me, the quality of earnings is a big deal. So we don't take right on everything. I've become a bit fussy, and this is not meant to be arrogant, but I've become a bit fussy with customers, and there's a list of ex customers now that it just wasn't fun working with. I'm too old to be not enjoying the working with customers. So quality of earnings, but we're hitting probably the 5 million euros again this year with a good quality of earnings. We don't do any non-retention business. You just can't do that. If you want to allocate resources, you got to get paid for it, and you got to get commitment from the customers. And there's still, Mark, as you know, in the industry, and it's more so in the UK, there's still an expectation out there with some customers that they can talk to, you know, three headhunters at the same time and put them on the same job. That is absolutely counterproductive for the company, for the candidates. For us, we lose credibility. Then the candidates say, well, Paul, I thought you had this exclusively. And they've been, contacted by another headhunter. No.
Okay, excellent. I agree 100%. Let's just get clear on the terminology for people who are non-finance. So when you say quality of earnings is another word for profit. People may not realize that. But what does quality of earnings mean to you?
Well, it means that I manage the gross margin line. That's very important for us. It's a very important KPI. And we increased our margins last year. And we will do as well this year. I mean, we can't afford to give discounts except to, you know, really special customers because, you know, we have to allocate resources where the revenue is and where the commitment is. So I watch the growth. And being an ex-CFO, I'm very tight on costs, selective on costs. We've put an awful lot of money into marketing these days, Mark, much more than we did in the past. We're doing a new website. We've got not just one podcast, we've got many podcasts with our partner Finance Business Magazine, which is a huge success in the marketplace. And that's really enjoyable. So what we, Mark, you know, what we're doing now is we're very much a relationship recruitment company. So we want to build relationships with candidates and keep these relationships going. And if, you know, if a candidate needs help, needs advice, career advice, I'll take the time and set up a call with them. But it's give and take, you know, we give a lot to our network. At least that's our objective. We provide them with, you know, information, what's going on in the marketplace, what products are going on in the market, what kind of trends are affecting CFOs. And, you know, we talk to, on the podcast, we talk to CFOs from the DAX, which is the same as the FT index in the UK or the Dow in New York. So we give a lot back to our network, and that pays off because it's a win-win, you know. Our communication on LinkedIn is very casual. If a CFO moves job, hey, how's it going? Best of luck. And we know these people, you know. We've had written contact. There's 10,000 CFOs in DAC, which is Germany, Austria, Switzerland, right, in German. And we have 2/3 of those in our network, and we've handpicked those, if you wish, which has been a huge amount of work. We did that over 2 years with tailor-made communication. You know this. You and I have talked about it. We had help from an agency on that, but we're always very individual in our, you know, when we talk to or write to a CFO over LinkedIn. It's a very individual communication, and we don't send out in-mail stuff and that kind of thing. That's not really us.
All right, fantastic. I'd love to learn more about your LinkedIn strategy because I know that's huge to you. But first, you mentioned, so you only work with committed customers, no contingency. It's either retained or it's an exclusive interim assignment. But I was interested, you said you have a list of X customers. What's your criteria for firing a customer? Like, when would you decide this is not, we're not enjoying it, and it's not a good, return on our energy?
I mean, we don't do it lightheartedly, obviously.
I understand.
There's nothing arrogant about us. But if we're not enjoying working together, if the process is not good, I mean, in this day and age, if you get your hands on, you know, top three candidates or two or even one for that matter, we never say we're going to produce a shortlist. We'll produce at least one, but that one person will be perfect for the job, in our opinion. And the customer is not coming back with, setting up appointments and dicking around. That's no good. We're wasting people's time. We had to give you a concrete example. It's not an ex-customer yet, but perhaps. We presented two candidates, and the first candidate, the senior guy on the board, wanted him. The other guy was not that convinced, so that didn't work out. And the second candidate, who was really, really, highly, highly rated by the customer, they said to him, look, why don't you, first of all, make a decision as to whether you want to change job or not? And then we can talk about an offer. And I talked to the candidate, and frankly, that's just stupid. I mean, I'm not going to make a decision to leave a company unless I know what's on offer.
It's backwards.
Yeah, it's backwards. I just saw, and he turned it down, and I had a chat with him, and it was just such a shame. So, that's a process where you consider, does it make sense to continue or not? Because you can focus your energy on other stuff and provide other customers better service in that period of time, and it's also about quality of earnings. I'm a big fan of return on energy invested, and scalability. They're my two key drivers in the business, and luckily enough, there's some great customers, and I really love working with them. And by the way, Mark, on interim, you don't have, it's not typical that you have exclusivity on interim. What happens on interim is, if you're close to the customer, you'd be the first to be asked. But then you have to produce. And if you don't produce, they'll move on. And, some of our customers, even our best customers, they go also to providers in London, not just here in Germany. And these guys are cutting the crap out of the margins that we're used to in Germany and have all kinds of different, a little bit cowboy-like tactics. shall we say opportunistic, Mark? Not really. Having heard about it, that the customer is looking, and then sending CVs without really having had any communication with the private equity investor. So it's yourself. You've been in recruitment a long, long time. It can be a very messy business.
Are you worried about keeping your recruitment firm up to date with the latest technology? After all, your clients expect you to be ahead of the curve. But how do you select the right tech for your recruitment firm and make sure that you earn enough new business as a direct result to make back the cost of your investment? Which is why our friends at iIntro provide in-depth coaching alongside their technology to help you get the most out of your investment. They offer an extensive suite of tools, but let's just take one example, their behavioral assessment tool. It's built right into their online system, so you don't have to buy or learn a whole new platform. They also include training on how to use behavioral assessments to improve your pitching technique, while also increasing the longevity of your placements to a staggering 96% after 12 months. For a free demo of iIntro's suite of recruitment tools, including behavioral assessment, just go to recruitmentcoach.com/retained. Remember, when you engage with our sponsors, you also help support this podcast. Just go to recruitmentcoach.com/retained, then follow the instructions to get started. You've given some good examples of customers. Essentially, it's to do with the communication and the quality of their process. But I think a lot of clients don't understand how much the market has changed, and they haven't adapted to the new reality. And like, to some extent, is it our responsibility to coach them and advise them about how they need to run their recruiting process in order to capture the talent? Of course, they may or may not take your advice, I suppose.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's lip service if it's a bigger organization. What I do now, Mark, is I emphasize even before I give them a candidate briefing, guys, the market is crazy. You've got to commit to moving very fast. And if I send you a candidate, please interview them, because you know that's my job to select the candidate for you. And if you want to start second guessing them, I've interviewed these people, obviously. So if I've interviewed somebody and I give it a thumbs up, then I expect my customer to interview. There should be enough trust, and that works, 99% of the time. One of the customers I used to work with, who was just a real pain in the ass with the whole process and the style of interviews, and it just wasn't fun. Yeah. So
absolutely.
It's got to be fun. You know that, Mark. I mean, with negative energy, you won't perform. With positive energy, you'll overperform. I'm a big fan of being selective. And as I said, it's not meant arrogantly. It's just return on energy invested, and that's for me as a CFO always important.
Fantastic. Let's talk about marketing, because it's something that is really interesting. Because although your background is finance, you're actually excellent at marketing, Paul. Tell me about this benchmarking product, because that sounds like it's genius. It's like a Trojan horse, which gets you into the customer and helps them to identify where the gaps are and where they need to improve the team, which then, of course, could lead into your recruiting services.
That's purely coincidental, Mark.
Okay.
Well, thank you for the kudos on marketing. If you've worked for probably, in my opinion, and I'm not objective, the best brand in the world, which is Nike, and I had the pleasure of presenting to people like Phil Knight and Michael Dell. American companies are the best marketeers in the world. I think everybody knows that. So I've learned a lot, and I was also a business head of a business unit at Nike. So that's where the marketing comes from. The benchmarking is a big deal. We're just getting ready to launch on a multi-channel approach. We want to get the launch right. We're talking to our PE customers. We have a PE podcast which we sponsor, which is called What's Up Corporate Friday. That's with a very good partner company of ours who have all the PE companies in their network. So the podcast goes out to all of those guys. We're working on a deal to sponsor a TV studio, which is something exciting with our closest partner. We've agreed we want to do. We just need to do a bit of negotiating, of course. We push LinkedIn very hard. We're working on focusing also on our internal network. We need to coach, particularly interim managers, and not just interim managers. It sounds pretty basic, but what are the do's and don'ts of a CV? Yeah, and there's some simple things like if you get a CV, and I always ask for a photo, yeah. And I know if I was in America, I'd be killed for that, yeah. But I don't care. I'm not in America, right? And I just and the, you know, I tell the guys, look, if you want to make a good impression, it's the visual age. We need a photo, right? And then when you have your CV, you know, black and white is out, a little bit of color, right? And put in the link to your company. So if I'm a headhunter and I don't have to go Googling who the company is, but I'll click on the link and I'll see what kind of a company it is or it was if I don't know them, and go back to the last two or three links they send. So you can put all that on one page, yeah? And, you know, when I get a black and white CV without a photo and, you know, kind of all over the place, I go, oh, I can't present this to a customer. I just can't do that, right? So because, you know, if you're under time pressure, those CVs go down in the priority list because, you know, my feeling is if you send your CV, you got to be committed to making a good product out of your CV that we can use to market you as an individual. So there's a bit of work to be done there. We want to coach our website. There's, you know, a few older interim managers that are very qualified. They're just not that, you know, digital or you know, good on the visuals. And that's okay. We'll help them on that. So
that sounds, yeah, absolutely. 100% agree with what you're saying about the CV. But circling back to the benchmarking thing, I'm really keen to understand how that works because I've never, ever heard of anything like this before. I think it's very original. It's a great differentiator.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, let me give you some background on that. I do that. The expert on that is, well, it's me being a former CFO. I worked on a benchmarking product before I set up Finance People Solutions. And so it's a hobby of mine. I mean, it's really, what did we do? We go in and we analyze the main processes in the finance organization. And every company in the world, no matter big, small, or middle, has three main processes. Yeah, it's sell to collect, purchase to pay, and record to report. All CFOs will know what I'm talking about there. Those are the three key financial processes in any company. So we go in and we analyze the hell out of that. And we have best practices. My partner used to be part of a well-known a group that did benchmarking. So he spent 4 years there and he's learned quite a lot. And it's you know, we don't charge for consulting days like the, you know, the big strategic consulting companies do, you know, McKinsey, BCG, Bain, et cetera. They come in and you have a bill for $10,000 a day for the partner and he comes once in 12 months and says hello. It's been a little bit sarcastic now, of course. But we don't charge consulting days. We have a product and it depends on the size of the legal entities we benchmark. And we have modules, there's three modules. And depending on the size of the company, we're talking about, you know, relatively small money for a great product. We're talking about if it's a small company, maybe 30 grand. And if it's a bigger company, 100 grand. Yeah. So, and no consulting days. Yeah. So it's for me, it's I'm really, really convinced about this product. And I've just been talking to operations people at one of my favorite customers, and they're very open-minded to this because one thing, and it's very helpful for private equity. We don't just do private equity, but this really does work for private equity, Mark, because if, you know, when private equity is doing a due diligence and they take our product to due diligence, the finance organization, they will know within a couple of weeks, is the finance organization red, which it typically is, but it could be really, really dark red, or is it yellow or is it green? And that's why, you know, they very, very often, almost without exception, take out the CFO and beef up the organization. So it really, you know, dovetails into our recruitment business.
I love that. That's fantastic. So then you've got, in the last time we talked about your relationship with Finance Business Magazine and all the video you were doing, tell me about the podcast, how and why that you decided to go down that road.
Yeah, that's back to, you know, sharing knowledge. It's talking to well-known CFOs, public companies over here, but not just startups, biotech we had recently. We had a big corporation guy as well. It's really understanding the motivation of these CFOs in their careers, in the context of their careers. Did they plan their career from the beginning? How has it come about that they're now very successful public company CFOs? And what their thinking was on that and what they look for when they're hiring people. So it's all really about how to structure your career, how to plan your career. And we share that then with our, you know, with our network. And CFOs love it because, You know, CMOs have two priorities. Is my family healthy? Is there food in the fridge? That's the number one. And number two is, how's my career going? Yeah. And one thing, Mark, which I'll interject here with now, but, you know, things have changed in the marketplace. People are becoming a lot more thoughtful than they used to be. That's driven by Corona. It's driven by this terrible war in the Ukraine. Yeah. And people are now reprioritizing their lives with work-life balance. That is definitely a trend, which I fully understand. I mean, it's the same for me. I talk to my wife about it quite a lot. You know, life is too short. And when you see, you know, what's going on in Kyiv and Donbass, it's so horrible. And then Corona. I mean, I had Corona myself 5 weeks ago, and I spent more or less 3 weeks in bed, just tired, no energy. And I'm still not 100% recovered today. And you know, everybody's had that. I mean, I'm having a big birthday party. I won't tell anybody how old I am or how young I am, but I'm having a big party on the 7th of May, and we've got 130 people coming, and we've asked them all to test. I mean, there's no official requirement to test here in Frankfurt anymore, but we're doing that, and the people are absolutely delighted. We have some older people coming. My mother-in-law said that they're all close to 80 or even more, so we want to protect them. But yeah,
absolutely.
The whole behavior of candidates has changed, and the demand. People can't afford to wait to fill positions. I'm always a big fan of a PE company cannot have a vacant CFO position for longer than a day. Yeah. There's just too much to lose. So we really position this interim to perm, and that's really PE love it, because, you know, you get them on board relatively quickly. They get up and running a lot faster than perm candidates because they're used to, you know, high pressure projects. And you don't have the big redundancy risk when you do a, you know, a 3 or 5 year contract with a CFO and it doesn't work out. You have to pay a fortune. In this case, you don't pay anything. You can get rid of them in 2 weeks and we'll find a replacement. And quite often we do parallel. We have one now for a private equity company where they're, you know, I had the briefing with the CFO. Just give you an example, Mark. Briefing with the CFO this week. A great guy. I mean, chemistry is so important in this business. And he was explaining the situation. It's a bit of a mess, and one of his key players has become pregnant, and she's going to take time off, you know, mother leave, as we call it here. We talked, and his plan was to look for a perm. And, you know, at the end of the conversation, I said, Nico, you need an interim right away. You've got big problems. You need to manage that. We'll look parallel for a perm. And Nico said at the end, you know what, Paul, I couldn't agree more. And Nico is now interviewing our first interim candidate today. And the briefing we move fast. The briefing was the day before yesterday. But we've got him. We presented him now, probably one of our top three accounting interim managers in Germany. Who we
amazing.
Know. So we can. I'll let you structure this, but let me just add one thing, Mark. Sure. I mean, for us, the difference for us is we have relationships with these people. So if I call a guy, Andreas is the guy's name in this case, I say, Andreas, I've got a great project for you. He will be convinced right away because he knows my track record, and he'll make himself available to talk to that customer. Yeah, and that's why, Mark. I don't like this term headhunting. I think this headhunting thing is a term of the past. I call it resource matching. Yeah, we match resources. We don't headhunt the people. We have them already in our networks, and we have relationships with them. So it's about what's the best position for these people with whichever customers. So it's an evolution from the old. I mean, like headhunting, you know, suggests okay, I'll go and hunt. Yeah, all over the place, and you know, I'm not close enough to the bigger recruitment companies now because I'm no longer on the market, of course. But you know, when you look at the Champions League players, like you know them all, the Aegons and Korn Ferry and Spencer and all those guys. I mean, you know, they're beefing up their organization. They've got very good people. I don't think they're as dynamic as boutiques are, and I would like to think we are a boutique. And, you know, they don't have the CFO knowledge that I have from having been a successful CEO. And that's a huge USP for us.
Oh, absolutely. Paul, I want to explore this idea of the resource matching, because you highlighted that you've basically gone through a 2-year exercise of identifying and sort of curating a network of finance people who, and you reckon you've got a relationship, you've had some correspondence with 2/3 or 3/4 of the, you know, senior finance professionals in your region,
yeah,
which is fantastic. You told me a story, it was a few weeks ago now, that you filled a role, it was €100,000 fee, and you turned that around in 7 days. Could you tell that story?
Oh, which one, Mark? I can't remember.
Has that happened more than once?
Yeah. No. It the better your network is, the more quickly you can do it, you know?
And, right.
I mean, one thing I've learned, I wasn't born in the recruitment business. So I've learned a lot from common sense. I put more focus now on the customer briefing than I used to. Yeah. Because that's and you've advised me on this as well as my coach, right? You've got to have the briefing call with the customer, and you've got to qualify it. You've got to, you know, put it from a 0 to 10. 10 is, yes, this is going to be a great cooperation. The guy's really good. They're efficient. They'll make quick interview appointments and all that good stuff. And others are all over the place. Yeah, all over the place. And those guys that are all over the place, they slip down on the priority list. Yeah, and that's something I didn't do years ago. I mean, I'm very enthusiastic, as you know. So I'm talking to a customer and they need help, and I move fast. And I quite often move faster than the customers. Guess what? It doesn't work. It breaks down. And I've had that a few times. So that's a learning for me, is spend more time up front explaining the situation to the customer, explaining the market. And the market has never been as crazy as it is now. Never. At least since I set the company up in 2014. So you've got to, in Germany, there's an expression which says, man muss sie abholen. You've got to get them on the same page as yourself. And you've got to get them fully committed. That's why we have the commitment fee to moving forward quickly, to taking my advice. I know the market. That's what I get paid for. So that's, you know, a learning for me. I've had a few painful experiences trying to move too fast, but you know, I'm always motivated by speed and quality and the combination. That was in my career as a CFO or as a general manager, and it's in my career now. And believe me, you know, I'll give you an example of me. In the company, we work on voicemail only. We only communicate within the team, you know, except if you're sending a CV or something. It's all voicemail, because it's quick. And everybody's on voicemail, and you leave a message and you have an answer within, you know, 2 seconds.
Interesting. So, Paul, this is something that we advise all our clients, and you've done it. You're one of the best at this, which is really mapping out your market, identifying, you know, all of the customers as well as the, you know, on the client side, but also the candidate side, and you've curated this network so that you know all the best people already. And that gives you that speed and quality that you're talking about, rather than having to reinvent the wheel and start from scratch on every search, which takes, you know, weeks and possibly months, which, you know, the big search firms typically will take, you know, 3 months or longer to fill an assignment, and you're doing it in a week, which, you know, it you can't really beat that. That's phenomenal. Let's talk about, did you have something?
Yeah, I mean, just to manage expectations out there, a week is not the benchmark. I mean, our benchmark for a direct search is getting the right candidates in place between 4 and 6 weeks.
Yeah.
It's usually not more than 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And you know, these are very carefully scrutinized candidates. All candidates that go to customers are interviewed by me. So, you know, scaling that is always the challenge, Mark. So the bigger the higher the positions are, then the more scalable it is because of the price involved.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Let's talk about LinkedIn. People should definitely, by the way, check out Paul Taff on LinkedIn and see what you're posting. It's Taff, TAAFFE. because you're very deliberate and very strategic about how you leverage LinkedIn. It's one of your main sort of channels for marketing and building your, you've got a really good personal brand. But what's interesting is that you're posting a combination of really good business insight, like your videos, your podcasts, you know, information that will be valuable to your market, but you're also posting a lot of personal stuff. Like recently you went to Barcelona to watch football, and you post a lot about football. So I think it's a nice blend of people getting to know your personality and as well as the business stuff. What could you talk a little bit about your strategy here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I am, you know, most Irish people are totally interested in some kind of sports, whether it's, you know, rugby, football, Gaelic football, hurling. We grew up with that as kids. So I'm hugely emotional about sport. And living in Frankfurt, I've been a member of the club, and we have season tickets, myself and my son, Justin, for me, 30 years. And my son is, I got him into the stadium when he was about four, if I remember correctly. And by the way, today is a huge day in the history of Eintracht Frankfurt. Why? We are playing West Ham United in London tonight in the first round of the semi-final of the Euro Cup. Yeah. And by the way, Mark, my childhood club in England, and everybody in Ireland has a club in England, you know, Man United, Liverpool, was neither of those. It was all, I always liked those, and Celtic, of course. West Ham United. My uncle was a huge fan many, many years ago. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us. Yeah. And his kids, so my first cousins, and I've been talking to them today, they're West Ham United fans. So normally I would have gone over to London. I mean, we were in Barcelona. There were 40,000 people from Frankfurt. But it was just unforgettable, absolutely unforgettable. I was there with my family. We bought 21 tickets altogether directly from Barcelona. They were kind of overwhelmed when they saw how many Frankfurt fans were at the stadium. And West Ham is now trying to prevent that, and they probably will be successful in preventing that. And so if you go to West Ham and you're not in the official Eintracht block, and I could have got tickets for West Ham directly from the club, you're not allowed to support Frankfurt. You're not allowed to wear your scarf. You're not allowed, you know, if you stand up when Frankfurt gets a goal and you go crazy, you'll be kicked out of the stadium. It's sad, this development driven by, you know, commercial football. And I mean, we had it at Chelsea. We were in the semi-final 2 years ago. And a little anecdote here, Mark, you've got to give me this time. I wrote to the guy at Chelsea, the hospitality manager, and I said, I've been a Chelsea fan since childhood. Can you get me six tickets in the VIP area? And his name was Ed, lovely guy, actually. And he said, yes, of course, always have. And I said, if Peter Benetti is around, then ask him to come in as well. You know, I was not being very honest. I was never a Chelsea fan. I was always a West Ham fan and a Frankfurt fan. But I got my six tickets. We went in there. And as it happened, the whole VIP area was full of Frankfurt fans. But we had to be careful. I mean, my son's best mate went crazy after we almost scored a goal. The hospitality manager, Ed, said, Paul, I'm going to have to get him out of here. I said, Ed, don't worry, we'll manage it. So the whole way through the game, I was trying to manage Ed and keep him quiet. And I was afraid security was going to come over and it was going to really, you know, escalate. But we got through that. But after the game, we wanted to go for a drink in the VIP and they closed it down. So it's football has a, unfortunately developed. And I mean, you know, London, Mark. I mean, the East Londoners are really down to where genuine people, of course, they have their hooligans. We have our hooligans as well. But, you know, the Eastern London, I love the Eastern London people, the mentality, etc. It's such a shame that we can't go over and have a beer with the guys in the bar and with my cousins. And you know, as we say in Ireland, have the crack. It's a terrible shame.
Well, there. Yeah, absolutely. So, look, this is all news to me. I know nothing about football, but what I love
You're Canadian.
Yeah, I know. We're not really a soccer nation, although getting better, I believe. But yeah. But listen, the point really is why? What's your rationale for talking about football on LinkedIn? Because a lot of like the LinkedIn police say, "Oh, this isn't Facebook. You should only post business stuff," which I disagree with. What's your thought process behind it?
Well, first of all, we're based in Frankfurt. My home is Frankfurt, so I'm very I identify very much with this town. My kids were born here, so it's home for me. That's point number one, and I love the club. It's very multi-culti. You know, we have players from all over the world, from Japan, from Eastern Europe, Croatia, Serbia, from Austria, and I love that. It's a huge. Frankfurt is the most international city in Germany by far. I mean, we also had the U.S. troops here, the GIs, many years ago, and in my opinion, they were good for Frankfurt, good for the culture. Maybe they'll be coming back. God knows what's going to happen over there in Ukraine. And for me, it's part of my personality. And, you know, a lot of our CFOs are Frankfurt fans, and we get a rapport going. My posts, I mean, two posts today, no, only football. There's no business posts going out this week anymore. Yeah, it's all football. It's all fun. We sent out photos of our trip to Barcelona with my wife and my kids. And it's just great fun. And LinkedIn doesn't penalize this in any way.
No, it doesn't. The opposite. And that's what people don't realize is that, you know, often it's the photos of you at an event or, you know, pursuing your passion that gets more traction on LinkedIn than something that's boring. You know, why can't business be fun? It's not, there's no longer these boundaries, these hard boundaries between your personal life and your career. They're very much more integrated now, I think.
Yeah. I mean, if you know, my former boss, Tony Alvarez from Alvarez Marsal, he used to do, I haven't seen him actively recently, but Tony was always posting photos of his children. One of them's a model, one of them's a musician. And I still love it, you know, the mixture. I mean, why not mix? You know, the personality is not just business driven, it's also personal driven. And I mean, when Ireland's playing well in rugby, I post the hell out of that and have great fun with the English guys. And Canada's coming on in rugby, by the way. So kudos there. Yeah, no, it's just part of my life. And I'm a big fan of having fun while living.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask you just because you mentioned it earlier and I forgot to pick up on it. What did you learn from working for Phil Knight? Because that, you know, I read Shoe Dog, which is a fantastic book. If people haven't read that, which is kind of his autobiography, but what were your kind of learnings or takeaways from that experience?
Yeah, I love talking about my time at Nike. It finished a little bit earlier than I would have liked. They wanted me to go to the States to do a staff job in Beaverton in Oregon, and my second son was just five, and we decided against that because you know Oregon, as you well know, you go to Chicago and it's still 4 hours on a plane, so it's a little bit far away, and culturally also quite behind Europe. You know, Nike gives a whole new definition to innovation, the way they do things. I mean, we had guys coming over from Beaverton, the headquarters, and coming to our management meetings in Germany. It was just inspiring the way they looked at things, the way they looked at key account management, customer management. It was completely the opposite to the way we did it in Germany, you know, and we learned a lot. Now, some people resisted it a bit, which wasn't so smart. You know, if you're sitting in a board meeting and you're inspired by the people in there, and I remember Tom Clark was the president of Nike back in those days, name like Clark, obviously an Irish background. So Tom and I got on really, really, really well. And you know, they. I remember when I went into Nike, I came up with a transformation plan within about 60 days. And it was like, I still have it actually in my office, 250 initiatives. If I had the benchmarking product that we have now back then, it would have been a lot quicker. And, you know, and the head of EMEA, Martin Coles, rest in peace, unfortunately, and Tom and Phil Knight, they all wanted to see it. So, you know, it was, for me, that was very flattering and, hugely motivating to be part of the family Nike, and Nike, one of them, Nike's main culture attributes was challenging things, challenging the status quo in a constructive way. Mm. Yeah. So I met some great people there. I'm still friends with a lot of people. We had a great team, the European CFO team. I mean, you know, people from Sunderland, from Milan, from Paris. Jesus. I mean, you know, we're talking about Barcelona. We had a finance event in Barcelona many, many years ago. I have photos of it. And it went on through the night, put it like that. So we had we had to go the next day. There was no way we couldn't go. That wouldn't be accepted. So we were all very tired in the session the next day. But we went through the night, and you can imagine what we were up to during the night, having a few beers and having a chat. So it was kind of interesting being back in Barcelona last week. We stayed in the beautiful hotel, Juan Carlos Hotel. And it came back to me. I looked at the photos when I got back. And all of those guys, we were just great guys. We had a great rapport. Lovely, lovely people. Very demanding. But Nike, definitely the most impressive company I've ever worked for. And Michael Dell is another guy who's hugely humble. Hugely humble. Comes into a board meeting with a rucksack and takes his dad along. And he says, "Dad, just sit there and have a listen." You know, so informal. I mean, Michael Dell is a lovely, lovely guy, and he, I mean, very courageous guy. Takes his company from the stock market and gets a private equity partner in there and buys EMC. Hugely impressive, Michael Dell. Yeah, so great experience for me having been exposed to those guys. And you know, Lear Corporation was run by entrepreneurs. The guys who grew up on the shop floor and bought the company and did an MBO and did a quote of the company again. Really different business, automotive business, Mark. Very down to earth. Very. These guys were like, you go into a presentation and you put up the wrong slide. I remember our European EMEA CEO, Bob Rossiter, also RIP, unfortunately. Bob was a character, you know, started off on the work floor and customer was king with him. I mean, there was nothing else apart from customers. I mean, my first meeting with Bob he said to me, "Paul, why do we need finance?" And I said, "Bob, because we want to keep you out of jail, right?" And he said, "Okay, that works. Go ahead. Can you cut them down by 50%? And I said, "Bob, I promise you I'll have a close look at it, but I won't commit until I you know, have a look." It, you know, automotive business, it's hugely competitive, low margin. I mean, when I went from Nike, which is, you know, a casual type company, to the automotive business, which was probably the toughest business in the world. That was a culture shock, Mark. I mean, everybody in the interviews, they were wearing ties and they were all at least 60 years old, the guys. But, you know, I did that culture move. And at the end, it was great for my career because we did a huge amount of M&A. We, you know, we spent years buying companies and went from 2 billion to 7 or 8 billion a year revenue. And also enjoyed it. And my CFO in Detroit, who I still have a good relationship with, Don Stebbins, was a New York banker. We had a great time.
Amazing. So what do you feel have been the elements from that you've taken from those experiences and sort of integrated into Finance People Solutions?
Well, first of all, solutions. You know, there's never a problem. There's always a solution. And you mean when I'm in a briefing and you know I have my notes, but frankly, you know, within 5 or 10 minutes, I get it. You know, I get it what they're looking for, and it's kind of structured in my mind. And then I start thinking about, well, okay, I mean, our network is huge, so I don't have everybody in my head, but you know, I think that could be something on the interim side there, or on the perm side as well, for this person, that person, So it's you know, the innovation that we have with the benchmarking, for example, that's hugely important. We have a very high energy level. Everybody in the company is very motivated. We haven't lost anybody over the last few years, at least not voluntarily. So high energy level, very results driven, very quality oriented. You know, never presenting candidates that shouldn't be presented. It happened once, actually, in 2014. This guy, who I thought was okay in the interview, he made a terrible mess in
in the action. That was very, very embarrassing. But I was highly motivated to compensate that. And we got the right guy then within a couple of weeks after that. So that was, you've got to have the quality control in there. So, yeah, lots of different things. Feeling comfortable with, all kinds of nationalities. I'm a very international, global citizen, I would say. As most Irish have been, the gypsies. One of my friends called me a gypsy, but in a positive sense. So, delivering results, keeping the team motivated, keeping the team incentivized.
Paul, let's talk about that, because you have a very interesting approach to building your team, and you've hired quite a few students. Could you explain your strategy there?
Yeah. Yeah. Working with students is hugely refreshing. I mean, they're highly motivated, energized. They're very social media, very, very competent on that. We have a Azure Fix every Wednesday. We call it the Breakthrough Group. And we just talk about new ideas and how to do things. And now we just finished. Neve has just done her marketing. We call it master's document, which we reviewed yesterday, and interactively in the team gave their input. I gave my input, and then we've got Anna, who's doing she's doing her master's on search process optimization. We call it master's, a bit of a spin on being a student. And we've got Milena working on candidate management and doing her master's on that. It's great, and you've got to blend it with the more established players like the two Christianas and Susanna. So we blend it. I mean, I'm very, very careful that the people who have been here longer don't feel like we're turned into just a student company. It's the mixture. It's a mixture. I mean, I'm a big fan of constant challenging how we're doing things. Make it better every day. Make it better. In our coaching group, Mark, I mean, I take away a lot of inspiration from that. I really enjoy that, as you know, and you've got one guy who I really love in that group is Joel, who's just done so much, and he knows recruitment from A to Z and from Z to A. And with Joel speaking, you can't hear anything. It's pure silence because people are fascinated by him, and I love that. That's been very helpful for me getting insights also from the US, which is the most innovative market in the world, in my opinion, and the UK is fairly rebellious as well in terms of doing new stuff. We're slow in Europe to adopt that, but I want to keep the exposure to the US and the UK to hear what people are doing, to hear their ideas. And I mean, there's still a lot of people doing a lot of non-retainer work, even in our group.
So
I don't mean to be arrogant, but to do a job properly, you've got to be able to allocate the resources. You've got to take the time to do a good search. And this retainer thing where three headhunters or non-retainer thing where three headhunters are, the finance market is full of what I call CV brokers. I won't mention any names. That's the business model. And they do it quite well. And I used them myself when I was a CFO. But, executive search boutique is a different world.
100% agree with that. So if people want to check out my interview with Joel Slenning, which is who Paul's referring to, then we'll include a link in the show notes. He co-chairs the Apex group with me. But Paul, when you say master's, I wanted to really understand. So you've got students. Are they still studying? So they're working for you part-time or?
Yeah, they're still studying, okay. But they're still able to put in a lot of hours for us. So they're like full time. I mean, they have, wow, a day or two in college, but Neve works Sundays. They're always available and it works. It's a great blend. I mean, I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy it. I mean, I remember at the beginning when I had a partner in the business and I was playing golf and doing bike trips and not really being that much involved in the day to day. He hired some people, cost a fortune, and performance was just not there. And we really cut our cost base down tremendously, and performance went up. I mean, our sales per head is probably, if you consider I'm the only one actually selling to customers, which is a bit of a challenge really. And I keep thinking about how can I perhaps, you know, find a backup. The jury's still out on how I do that. But our revenue per head is probably, you know, way up there in the industry in Germany.
Absolutely. Well, because you have, is it six people in total or?
We've got seven.
You've got seven. So divide 5 million revenue divided by seven people. That's a phenomenal, you know, revenue per head. That's almost unheard of. Are the students sort of, is it an official internship program or it's just like, what's the arrangement? If I wanted to replicate that in my business, Paul, like how would I go about it?
Well, we have a contract, and they're not allowed to do more than 20 hours a week.
Okay,
that's the official legal prerequisite. We pay their health insurance, and they get an hourly fee, and we tend to pay market or above market depending on which one.
Yeah,
and it's just great fun. We were lucky, mind you. We were only looking for one, and we had three unbelievable applications, and I just couldn't say no to any of them.
And are you looking, like, is it a, do you have a relationship with university? How have you identified these individuals?
No, not really. I mean, my sons went to Frankfurt University, and but no real relationship with the university. We just did an ad, kind of a, you know, an ad with a little unconventional, which students tend to like, and we move very quickly into interviews, and absolutely, absolutely no regrets. Love working with these people.
So you advertised where?
We did advertise at Frankfurt University. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to be fair, that's where we did advertise. And then we advertised, I think we did an advertisement in Indeed.
Yeah.
The big American company also sponsors of Eintracht Frankfurt. But I mean, well, Anna is from Frankfurt. Yeah, they're all really from the Frankfurt region.
But yeah. And Paul, what did you describe you were looking for? Because you're not the roles that you've described are not conventional, like recruiters, or you weren't looking for recruitment consultants exactly. So what role were you advertising?
Yeah, we didn't think that much about the role. We left that a bit open depending on the talent, right? And now we've seen, for example, I mean, Daniel. Who's a little bit older. Daniel's very strategic. He's done a lot of stuff in the recruitment industry. So he does my strategic planning, and we brainstorm all the time about how to position the company and that. I mean, Anna is, she was in Barcelona, by the way, as well. She's half Spanish, and her dad's a big Eintracht fan. She's really excellent at searching. I mean, you know, she had a three-month learning period. She's still learning, but she loves it as well. She's really eager, et cetera, et cetera. And Milena is the last one to come in. Milena is working now on how we manage candidates, how we even build the relationships more so, what kind of communication we should be doing. So Milena's working on that. So I think, you know, open-mindedness is important. And for me, it's more about personality than what they've done before. Now, to be fair also, they've had a little bit of exposure to being in a personnel department, and Daniel worked for a couple of headhunters as well. So, you know, there was having a little bit of recruitment DNA or personnel department DNA was not unimportant.
Right. Okay. So if I'm going to replicate this, Paul, because we're growing, as you know, our business as well. But and you're advertising, whether it's on Indeed and LinkedIn or with the local university. I know you're saying it wasn't role specific, but presumably in the ad copy you have to say what the job is. Like, what, how are you describing the opportunity?
No, we just described the company, what we're doing, and we didn't. We didn't. It was like, come and join the family, and you know, blah blah blah. And you know, I was open-minded, and you know, it developed in the training period. That Anna is really good at searching. That Daniel's more on the strategic side, and Milena, she started with the candidate side, but she can also do searches later. I mean, we have a pile of searches now, and Jesus, it's challenging. Keeping the productivity up. especially when Eintracht Frank was in the semi-final in Europe. Difficult for me to concentrate, Mark.
Absolutely. Well, Paul, look, so your big birthday celebration is May 7th. Is that your actual birthday?
No, my actual birthday is on the 4th, but I've decided to become 40 again, Mark.
All right. It sounds so good. But
the invitation on the top, it says, Paul is 40 again.
Well, my 49th birthday is on May 10th. So we're both Taurus.
Yeah, well, which is a good one. My dad was also Taurus, and although I would say, Mark, knowing you now very well over the last few years and being a great coach for me, that you are a much more, that's probably your Canadian upbringing, but you're a much more diplomatic Taurian than I am.
Okay.
You're more chilled than I am, Mark.
Fair enough. Well, Paul, listen, this has been a great pleasure. I really enjoyed, and thank you for sharing your insights. You've been, you know, hugely successful in the recruiting arena. And what I love about you is that you are also always looking to learn, grow, improve, challenging the status quo. And you don't have an ego. You just want, you know, you just want to be even more successful and do better every day. So I love that about you.
Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure dealing with you. You've been my coach now for quite a few years, and it gets better and better. And, you know, both of our businesses have evolved. I mean, we're growing, you're growing,
yeah,
which is great to see. And yeah, I mean, there's nothing that cannot be improved. Nothing that cannot be improved. You just got to do the granular analysis, be open-minded about it, and then you can take out a step or two steps or three steps and make yourself much more efficient. Always doable.
Fantastic, Paul. Well, look, I'm sure we'll speak in the meantime, but in case not, have a fantastic birthday, and I hope you have fun.
Thanks, Mark.
All right.
Don't worry. I will.
I'm sure you will. All right, sir. Take care.